Welcome to the Supported Living Property Podcast with your host, me, Lisa Brown, the place to learn about supported living property investing.
In this episode, Jo Alexander talks about setting up a new supported living business. She discusses the challenges for new providers around CQC registration, applying for tenders, insurance, and getting a property, and in which order to do these things. Hi Jo, it's great to have you here today. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
Yeah, really good, Lisa. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to speak to you today.
No, I'm really pleased you've come. It's taken us a little while to get it organised, hasn't it? We've both had to cancel things, so it's brilliant to finally get this sorted. So.
Yep, Sarah is always busy.
It is, absolutely. Do you want to introduce yourself and tell people a little bit about you, Jo?
Yeah, sure. So my name's Jo, and I've worked in social care for my entire career now, which is slightly longer than I should mention, otherwise it would give my age away. But started with older adults and dementia, people living with dementia, back when, moved across to work with adults with learning disabilities, and then have worked with a range of individuals from kind of very small children right through to end of life since. Held a number of roles, so from support worker right the way through to registered manager, and then moved into business development about 15 years ago now. So I've worked in business development since then, supporting organisations to grow their business organically and through acquisition as well.
Okay.
And then currently working independently. Sorry, Lisa.
Yeah,
so currently working independently as a social care consultant with a focus on business development. So there's lots of people with a focus on quality, and I've gone the other way and put my focus on business development.
Fantastic. And that's why you're here to talk to us today, is to share some of your wisdom around that. So I talk to a lot of providers, and there's a lot of new providers in the space, aren't there, at the moment, in setting up supported living businesses. And I think there's a lot of confusion when people set up about what they should do first. And I think this is a question I get asked a lot. So I'm really interested to hear your take on it. People say, do I need the house first? Do I need to my CQC registration first? Do I need to get a tender first? What should I do first? And where do you sit with that, Jo? What do you think?
Yeah, so I get asked the same question an awful lot as well. And you're right, there are lots of providers entering the space at the moment. And we see people coming through every day with queries about how do I get myself set up? I really want to do this. I've got all of this experience and passion. And where do I go next? So I think from the work that I've done, CQC registration always comes first. You know, there are very few opportunities to provide support without a registration. Obviously, if you're providing a regulated activity, you have to have the registration. And for the majority of cases, there will be somebody at least who requires that personal care element. So CQC registration would always be my starting point. At the moment, it's really slow, and I really feel for people trying to break into the space. There's been lots of changes, obviously, since the pandemic and the way in which CQC both inspect but also register their new services. So there are lots of delays, but that has to be your starting point. And I think if people can get past that, then they're on to a good step. In terms of houses versus tenders, you know, everyone thinks, well, I'll buy a house and I'll just fill it up. Not quite that simple. And I would always work with providers to say, actually, you should really consider whether that's the best route to go down. It could end up with a house that's empty without rent for, you know, 6, 12 or even longer months. And looking at what's available on the frameworks and DPSs and tenders has got to come before that. There is a slight confusion in that some tenders require you to submit your house details in order to join them. But you can generally get around that by working with a landlord and kind of vesting your interest in a property, working out what your costs are going to be, and putting those in with the caveat that actually the house would have to come after the tender. And most local authorities understand they don't want providers to have empty houses for a great period of time because they'll end up going out of business, and then the local authority lose out on that capacity.
I think that's really, really interesting because I think I've spoken to 4 or 5 new providers recently who have been advised by business coaches. I use the kind of inverted commas around those words, I think, in quite loose terms there. And they've been told to get a property before they've got CQC, before they're on a tender. And they're sitting there telling me they've been paying rent on these properties for a year and they've got nobody in. They're running out of funds. They're not going to be able to meet their contractual obligations to the landlord. And that's their business almost over before they started. And I think getting it the wrong way around can be really, really detrimental to your business. I mean, it's causing businesses to fail, isn't it, basically?
Yeah, before they even start a lot of the time. And it must be heartbreaking for somebody who takes that advice on and thinks, okay, well, I'll get myself a house sorted, because renting a property is relatively easy still. You know, the market is getting tougher, but there are a number of landlords who are willing to work with care providers. So renting the property is relatively easy. And then you sit with an empty house that you're paying rent on. And I speak to people probably every week who say, well, I've got a house and it's been empty for 8 months now. And how do I get referrals? And you're like, well, actually, you know, are you on the framework for the local authority? How far has your CQC registration gone? It's not as simple anymore as just phoning the local authority and saying, well, I've got a house, do you want to fill it? Mm-hmm. And all of the frameworks that exist to kind of pre-select providers and also exclude those that don't meet the local authority criteria mean that people end up with a property that they just can't fill. And they often, people take a property that doesn't meet the standards that you would expect for somebody, or doesn't meet the needs of the local authority's market position statements. So they may be looking for self-contained accommodation, really high priority for a lot of local authorities. And then if you rock up with a big eight-bedded house, they're not going to be interested in it. And then you've wasted, as you say, all of your funds potentially before you even manage to get started.
Yeah, absolutely. Or sometimes the frameworks aren't open for another year or 2 years. So you've got this house and actually you haven't got a chance to get onto that tender, you know, and actually get any referrals anyway. So
yeah, and that should really form part of your business planning. You know, when you're thinking about starting a supported living business, what does the local market to you look like? Is the framework closed for the next 2 years? In which case, what are your options? Well, you can do unregulated support, perhaps. You can approach the council about their use of spot contracts and contracts outside of their frameworks, but they are getting fewer and fewer. People are being forced to use the frameworks because it guarantees the local authorities using the best of their money on pre-agreed prices often as well.
And yeah, absolutely. There's good reason for that, isn't there?
Yeah. Absolutely.
You talked about the changes to CQC, particularly since COVID. What sort of things are you talking about there, Jo? What sort of things do you say?
So the kind of things we've seen from a registration perspective are they've introduced a rapid assessment now. So people putting in their registrations for domiciliary care or supported living, or sometimes both in the same. We're seeing a rapid assessment of those. So they're literally scanning the documents for keywords. And if those keywords are not within those, they're bouncing them back out again to be corrected. And that's before it hits the registration inspector. So that will happen sometimes quite quickly. And it's very black and white. So if the statement of purpose says that you need to put market research in and you call it something else, you've had it bounce out because it doesn't say market research. It says, I don't know, market profile or something different. But because it doesn't specifically say market research, here's my business plan with market research, it will bounce back out again. And we've had registrations, you know, I've seen them bounce out several times. So every time you fix something, you can pull it back in again. They'll say, actually, no, you haven't met this key criteria, and it comes back out again as well. So that's been quite frustrating, I know, for a lot of providers who have tried to do things by themselves as well. Had a registration bounce out 3, 4, 5 times and then just think, I don't know what to do with it anymore. It's almost like CQC don't want us to register, which clearly isn't the route they're going down. And that's before it hits your traditional registration inspector, who then obviously goes through things with a fine-tooth comb to ensure that they meet the criteria they're looking for. And all of that brings delays to the process. So, you know, I think CQC would say, oh, we'll aim to register within 10 weeks. They're nowhere near that at the moment. It's quite commonly around the 6 month mark to get people registered, and that makes it really tough again for starting a business. What do you do in those 6 months when you can't actually trade at all?
Yeah, it's a long time, isn't it, when you're setting up?
Yeah, and if people are still not working as well, you know, if they've stopped working to focus on setting this up, it's not as easy as it used to be, and it's certainly not as quick as perhaps it used to be.
No. Do you think there are plans to bring that time scale down, or does it look like it's going to sit around 6 months for quite a while, Jo, in what you're seeing?
I think it's really difficult to say. Obviously, I don't work for CQC, I don't know their inner plans, but given that they've just launched their changes to registration and inspection, and also their consultation on changes to the social care inspection market, I suspect it's going to be a while before it gets quicker again. I think that there's obviously a lot of work for them to do catching up on what's been missed during the pandemic, with their big focus on the lower achieving services at the moment, and registration for new services perhaps is not quite as big a priority for them as those that are already providing services. So I think it'll be a while before it becomes quicker again. But yeah, that's just my opinion.
Yeah, no, that's really valid. And I think it's really useful for people when they're setting up to have that idea that it is actually going to take them 6 months. So maybe don't pack in your job quite yet, or look at some alternative funding sources whilst that's going on, you know, because it, like you're saying, nothing's happening very quickly, is it, at the moment?
No, I think being realistic, even if you get registration in 6 months, it might be another 6 months before you are taking your first client. So, you know, a year is not an unheard of timescale at the moment. I was deciding to start and actually bringing in your first client, providing your first lot of support hours. And then, of course, the ability to sustain the business beyond that might be another 6 or 12 months before things start rolling into profit. And people don't necessarily realise that anymore. They think it's as simple as, well, I'll rent a house and I'll fill it up and I'll be grand. And it really isn't that easy.
No. And I think that's one of the things talking to you is that you're very realistic and very honest about it. Whereas I know that some of the other, there are a lot of false promises around. Like, I thought the property world was full of kind of really bad coaches and mentors giving people these false promises. You'll make £50,000 in 6 months and all of this nuts kind of like, yeah, you know, some people do, but not many. You know, and I think it's the same actually with the supported living setup world, isn't it? There are a lot of people giving those false promises, saying you'll have it all sorted, it'll all be fine, you know. But actually, so what you're actually saying there is to prepare for the fact that it's going to take you up to 2 years till you've got a sustainable business, really.
I think that's a really good point to say, that there are a lot of people that will say, yeah, you can do it in 12 weeks, or, you know, you'll be making a profit at the end of year one. And actually, it's really not true. The way the marketplace is at the moment and the demands on services and being sustainable and being good at what you're doing are perhaps two different things as well from a kind of care quality perspective. But you have to do both hand in hand in order to keep going. So, you know, I think 2 years is not an unreasonable time scale if you're setting up as an independent provider.
I think that's really helpful to give people that kind of framework to think about and be aware of it. Obviously, there are lots of other challenges when you're setting up, you know, to start with, aren't there? And insurance seems to be something that people are talking about quite a bit as being another change that's become more challenging. How are you finding that, Jo?
Yeah, so the providers that I work with are definitely finding getting insurance difficult. I think insurance across social care in general has been hard. The pandemic has brought around a lot of changes. We see people on, if you look at the social media groups, people are talking about massive increases to their general premiums of 50, 60, 70, 80%. And sometimes even more than that. Sometimes, you know, people are getting quoted double or more than their premiums pre-pandemic. So for a new business coming in to try and set that up, we're seeing a lot of the big names in insurance just saying no. They're not interested in taking on new providers at the moment. They feel the risk is too high. And those that are taking on perhaps want a 5-year cash flow forecast and a full understanding of the manager's kind of requirements and the experience that they've got, almost like a mini interview in itself before they'll decide whether they want to offer you insurance. And even if you get that far, insurance premiums are really high. So whereas they used to be a reasonable business cost, they're now really quite high part of your setup. And CQC obviously require you to have insurance proof before they'll register you.
So you could be paying for that insurance for quite a long time before you get tenants into your property.
Potentially. We have seen some examples where the insurance companies are saying, well, we'll give you kind of a proviso that, well, yes, we'll provide your insurance, but we won't actually start charging you until you are physically going to be using it. And CQC have been happy with that you've kind of explored the insurance options, you know what it's going to cost, and you've got a policy almost on hold, really, ready to start. Other cases, people are absolutely paying for insurance, and it's a dead cost, a bit like the rent on a property. Mm.
And the other challenge is property, isn't it? You know, you led really nicely into that, but that is a challenge. Obviously, that's what we do. And that's, you know, that's my background, is the property side of it and helping people with that. But do you want to talk a little bit about the challenges of getting your first property as well, Jo?
Yeah, so again, I think, you know, you guys do a fantastic job at Supported Living Gateway of negotiating that well with property investors. for individuals who are setting up in supported living, you know, quite often they might have a house that belongs to the family, or they may have bought with a group of colleagues or business directors, you know, they've bought a property that they want to use. And the requirements for properties are ever increasing. You know, the demands that people put on the properties they want to live in change quite often. There is a big move away, obviously, from big group shared living to much smaller accommodation. That doesn't come with the same financial viability and returns that a bigger property would perhaps have. And I think just for landlords understanding the extremes that a property can be put under with a supported living client within turns them off from it. You know, they don't necessarily want to go down that road of making adaptations from a property that they perhaps own.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's obviously what we spend a lot of time educating landlords about, the long-term benefits of it and how it can work really well for you as a landlord. But I think, you know, the providers that we're talking to who are setting up, and we've had a few deals that have fallen through actually because we can't, even the landlord's willing to work with them, the landlord's really happy to do the adaptations, but actually the stumbling block from the property side is the mortgage on the property. And quite often the landlord's mortgage company will do due diligence on the provider. And actually, if they're a new provider with no track record, the mortgage company might say, sorry, we're not going to let you lease your property to them. You know, so that's where, you know, everything else looks like it's all sorted. And then it can fall down at that point. In the way that you were saying the insurance companies will do due diligence on the providers, it's that same process. And they'll sometimes just say no. And we've had really upset landlords who've been really wanting to work with this new provider, really like their ethos, and the deal's fallen through at that point. So I think until you've got that track record, that first property can be a real challenge to get, can't it?
Yeah, and I think because it may sit empty for a while as well. And, you know, as a new provider, being able to build the compatibility within your service user group and the peer group that will be living within the property, all of those things bring challenges that providers don't necessarily think about when they're setting up. And then they stumble across them, like you say, you know, at the last hurdle or halfway through their process. And then you've got people waiting for a house, or people who thought they were moving in and now aren't, or landlords that are being upset. So, yeah, it's a difficult market at the minute, definitely.
Yeah, it is. It's really challenging, I think, isn't it? And I guess the other challenge when you're setting up is around funds, isn't it? And about getting your funds to get set up. You know, what do you suggest for people there? What do you talk about with your clients there?
So that if people are coming to me around their setup costs, they need to be realistic about the money that they've got available to invest in the business before it's going to start making a profit for them, and being realistic about how quickly they'll be able to draw a wage from it as well. So like many startup businesses, you know, the owners, directors maybe are not drawing wages or salaries for a relatively significant period of time at the moment, because your priority's got to be paying those staff that are working for you and meeting your bills. So we're seeing people coming through who perhaps don't have the capacity in their personal funding, and then getting bank loans or kind of remortgaging on their own properties to release funds has become tighter. You know, businesses don't always succeed, and I think mortgage lenders and banks as well have capped what they are prepared to do compared to, you know, a few years ago. And where people do get set up and then go on to apply for tenders, what they don't realise is that they then get credit checked again. And so just because you've managed to set yourself up doesn't mean you'll actually get through a tender credit check as well. So that's been a stumbling block for some providers who are perhaps running a small organisation, a small business, want to grow, want to join a local authority tender, and actually fail on the financial scoring, which has been difficult for them because it effectively limits what they can then do to grow and increase their business sizes.
There are so many challenges when you're setting up, aren't there? I think, you know, we've just touched on some of them there, but I think it really highlights, you know, how you need to have yourself together and organized, and have your, you know, a really clear plan about where you want to go and what's motivating you for it. Joe, obviously we'll put your contact details in the show notes so people can contact you if they want to find out more about the services that you offer. And have you got any tips or advice for people that you'd like to share, anything that we haven't covered today?
Yeah, so I think the social media groups are huge. You know, there is a dearth of information out there that people can get for nothing. You know, I'm not suggesting that people should start paying for advice or ideas, because they absolutely shouldn't. There is so much information. There's so much experience of people who've tried it and have succeeded, and also tried it and perhaps hit some stumbling blocks. So joining some of those social media groups and actually just talking to people about what their experiences are, I think is really valuable. And I still learn from them every day. You know, I'm in a lot of social media groups and I still learn from people's experiences every day around what they found challenging or what they haven't. And I would also say, you know, you talked earlier on about consultancy perhaps poorly advising or misadvising people. Again, just doing your research. And if someone wants to charge you from day one for a bit of advice, I'd say be a bit wary. There are a lot of consultants who will happily have a conversation with you for nothing and just kind of give you some advice to think about and before you jump in.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's really wise. Doing that due diligence on coaches before you part with your money is something, whether you're in property or supported living, I think is really,
or
really
any business.
Any business, I guess, absolutely. It's just checking them out really carefully so that you don't end up stung by people.
Definitely.
Absolutely. Jo, thank you ever so much. It's been really, really helpful.
Oh, you're welcome.
Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.